And I guess this kind of speaks to, you know, why people get into it. And there is another layer where people get into it because the perception is that a vegan diet is a healthy diet, right? I think to a degree that is true. However, I think some of the things that we've just been speaking on are contrary to that. When we're talking about protein, there's so much, you know, argument about what is a complete protein.
The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 45.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food's on you.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Follow me on Facebook at Food and Rothbard, all one word, or click the Facebook icon on my podcasts page, culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts, and join my Eating Liberty Facebook group. And there on the podcasts page, you'll find all my social media links, as well as links to my YouTube channel and links to support the show through PayPal, Patreon, or Bitcoin. You can also support the show in other ways, including with a few clicks of the mouse and a few kind words of support on your favorite podcatcher. Just leave a 5-star review and a positive comment, and that will alert the genies in the system to help other people find the show. Steve recently did just that, gave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and a great message. He writes, he used to be a chef and has been reinvigorated in his love of cooking. So that's exciting, and I'm glad to have had a part in that. Thanks, Steve. You coffee or tea or whiskey drinkers, I don't judge, can support the show and get a swell coffee mug with a purchase from my store, Cranky Without Coffee, linked on the podcast page. While you are on the podcasts page, download my muffins e-cookbook, foolproof muffin recipes that work, just by trading me your email address. You can then download the book. Folks, the school year is coming soon enough, and it's not too late to start homeschooling. If you've had enough of the state schools, look into the Ron Paul homeschooling curriculum with my affiliate link, culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool. The curriculum is self-taught, and that means less stress on the parents. The Ron Paul curriculum is pro-free enterprise and pro-business, which means students learn to start their own business, learn about money, and they write every day. Tom Woods, PhD, has created over 400 videos about history and government. Click over and read the testimonials, such as this parent who writes, quote, "She is more focused and determined than I could have imagined. I love to see how proud she is of herself," end quote. Help your kids succeed while you free up running around time. Click over to culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool to get started taking back your sanity. culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool. My guest today is Khalil Sadiq, my friend and chef. We worked together in Tallahassee as bakers, and he also had a business out of his shop selling vegan baked goods. It was there that I tasted his vegan desserts, and of them, my particular favorite was the brownie. We talk a bit about expectations of vegan desserts, as well as replacements for traditional desserts and why that's probably not a fair metric. We had a pretty good conversation, which went a bit afield from strictly vegan baking, but we did come back to that. We talked also a bit about making informed decisions as opposed to just following the hype of groupthink. Hello, Khalil. Thank you for joining me today on the Culinary Libertarian Podcast.
Hey, Dan, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. So we've known each other on and off for quite some many years. God, it seems amazing to say many years. Right. But let's get a little bit of a background and tell us how you got into vegan eating and then into vegan baking.
Okay. Well, background is I'm a chef. I've been doing it for 23 years now. And it's something I've done off and on throughout my career, but I got real deep into it when I was dealing with some health issues. And in dealing with these health issues, I started researching alternative ways of eating. And it didn't even really resonate with baking per se in the beginning. It was just more just in general. I got led into the vegan lifestyle with raw food and as well, vegan and raw living foods. And then as a pastry, you know, person that's always been into pastry, you know, I felt that that was, it's easy for me, it's easier to, it's easier, I guess, as a chef, maybe I'm saying that from a chef perspective, to kind of veganize certain things, but baking was a different type of challenge because it's more of a scientific process, and some things don't translate well in trying to do that. So that's what kind of got me into it and really just piqued my interest, you know, with the baking piece and as well as the, you know, let's say unbaking or non-cooking aspect of it. And I've just kind of done it on and on, off and on, you know, throughout my career.
Could we get a basic definition of what vegan is? I suppose the diet has a specific set of criteria, but how and why anyone makes that choice can be varied to either political, emotional, or perhaps physiological reasons. Well, I'm interested in trying to, I'm not going to try the case for veganism because that's another show, but basically, what is it?
Veganism is basically a person who doesn't consume any animal products. You know, that's it in its simplest form, you know, and then, like you say, there's, you know, people have different motivations for why, but at the end of the day, they don't eat or use any animal products.
And so in the case of veganism, which is one of the things that kind of confuses me, in the case of honey, that's considered an animal product.
Correct. Yeah, it's considered a byproduct.
So the principles sound pretty simple. Are there some ways that veganism can be a difficult thing to follow because of in obvious ways dairy or dairy derivatives are put into processed foods? So if you're not really examining a label, and this is something you mean to keep completely, I think there's probably some tricky bits there. What would those be?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you have different levels, you know. People get into, and I guess it's no way to avoid getting into that without, you know, speaking to the whys or why people get into it, and not to get too into that, but just to say that, you know, it just depends on a person's level of understanding information and how deep they're going into it. You know, it's different. Transition. So some people, you know, and I myself included, because I did veganism for a couple of years. I even did raw food for about a year. And you know, some people, I got into it and it was a difficult transition. So, you know, you're basically just cutting out what you know to be animal products. So some things are very obvious on the surface level. You know, you're not going to eat any dairy products, you're not going to eat any eggs, you're not going to eat those things. But then, you know, with labeling, there's different ways to incorporate those things into products and not call them eggs, not call them you know, not call them milk. And then it just becomes incumbent on that person to do that research to find out what those things are, if they are, you know, that strict about it. Yeah, I mean, and that's what it is. Like, you would do that research. Like, it is difficult because once you start getting deeper into it and you talk about sugar, you know, a lot of vegans won't do white sugar because it's, you know, it's a bone charge used in the process of clarifying the sugar. And, you know, these type of things, even with some juices, you wouldn't consume those type of juices because, again, sometimes gelatin is used to clarify certain beverages. So it's just a matter of you as that, you know, that individual doing that research to avoid those things if that's your choice.
Now, the juice thing, I didn't even know about that. I was thinking the obvious one, like milk chocolate. Or in some cases, I don't think flavored chips are really high on anybody's food choice, but I know that sometimes there is casein derivatives and that can present issues for people who are either choosing to avoid dairy or for whatever the reasons are, don't want dairy because of some other reason. But I know that the ingredient list can be a very tricky thing to navigate, and that's probably also another show.
Right.
So let's focus a little bit on the baking now. So excluding altitude, because altitude, it brings its own problem. What is different in the mix or the wait time or the baking time versus conventional baking? So is there, since this is something I just really don't know anything about, in regular baking, I can sort of intuit that this liquid is going to hydrate this flour at a particular, at a fairly predictable pace. So if I let my biscuits rest for 10 minutes, I'm going to be good. Is there some, and this is almost answered no, but is there some panacea which can be used for a recipe or a particular ingredient that we can say, this is now the rule for vegan baking?
Well, I wouldn't make it that general. Like, I think that it depends on what you're doing. I mean, I think one question you asked was, you mentioned something about time and temperature, and, you know, I guess how does changing dairy products, alternating dairy products for a vegan version, how does that affect baking? Is that the question?
Yes, that is part of the question, because you and I both know, because we work together. Right. When you're making a cake, and you have milk and eggs and melted butter and flour and sugar. Mm-hmm. Even if the ratios are different from thing to thing, there is a predictable and an anticipable, easy for me to say, expectation and reaction from those ingredients and the application of heat and the amount of time it takes from the finished dough or batter to go into the oven. I suppose a vegan baker has that experience in his fingertips too, but I don't, so it's a whole new world to me, and so this understanding of reaction and expectation, I don't have it.
All right, so let me say this. I'll preface my answer by saying this. I think that there are some things that you just should not veganize. I mean, it's good to try certain things, but if your goal is to get an exact comparable taste, whether it be texture, mouthfeel, all of this, you're not going to achieve it with everything. Like, and I'll use, for instance, like a pound cake. You and I know that a basic pound cake recipe is a pound of everything, a pound of flour, fat, eggs, sugar. And then you know, different ratios of if you're going to use a leavener, you don't really have to use a leavener, you can, but salt. You know, and then we know what that is going to yield. And, you know, not to get too scientific, but we know that, you know, that ratio of eggs to sugar to flour is going to yield a certain texture. Those eggs have a purpose in, you know, that pound cake, as do the butter. And when you try to veganize certain things, like, now you're taking for instance, the egg, because in that recipe you would be substituting eggs and butter. So the butter piece, you would substitute, you could use a emulsified shortening, Earth Balance, or Earth Balance. There's a few different products. I can't think of many other offhand because it's been a little while. But and then the egg, those are the two And if you're going really deep and you don't want to use white sugar, you're going to use a natural evaporated cane juice, or you know, something that has it's just like sugar, it's just less processed. And then the eggs. Now, for me, the eggs is where it gets tricky, because you know you're not going to get the same, you know, you're not going to get the same volume. The eggs aren't going to the replacer. You know, you have they have different replacers that you could use for eggs. You can use they have an actual ingredient called an egg replacer. But then, depending on what you're baking, you can use flax seeds. You can make a solution, I guess I would say, with flax seeds and water, where you let the flax seeds soak, and then it creates like a gelatinous type of substance that you would substitute for the eggs. Or you can use something that's that has more of a recipe to it in an egg replacer. It's pretty much one egg is one tablespoon, one tablespoon of replacer, 2 tablespoons of water. And it gives it that, but I'm just mentioning all this because I've tried it. It's just something about the chemical reaction, in my opinion, with the eggs and the butter, and with the flour too, because it's not a lot of flour. It's not that much flour for all the other ingredients, but they hold up, and the flour gives it structure. Whereas you get more collapse when you try to substitute an ingredient for egg, where the egg is, you know, you're getting air into the egg, that air is staying in once you cream the sugar and the butter, you add the egg, you're adding volume to it, and then the flour is the stability while it bakes, then the, you know, the egg is drying, you know, you're drying the liquid out of the egg, and it's holding form. Whereas with a vegan substitute, you're getting that air, but you have more opportunity for collapse. So even if you're using like a leavener, you'll get rise, but then it's just a certain, it have a different density and texture. So you can veganize a lot of things, but for me, it's just, I just don't even do it. I'd rather just have the regular pound cake. I guess that's why I'm just not a vegan. You know, I mean, and it's not to knock that, but I mean, cause I get the reasons and whatnot people do it, but certain things just don't work. Certain things work a lot better than others. We are talking about veganizing recipes, but like I would say, one specifically when you're dealing with eggs and you're doing like for instance, a meringue, you know, it's eggs. The eggs have a certain, you know, it's just a certain science with them that, you know, even from the point if you leave the eggs whole, and you're whipping them and you're adding sugar, you're getting air into them, you can fold that into flour. You can separate them. And like when you're doing a Genoa cake, you know, some Genoas you do a yolk. You would whip the yolk till it's real frothy, adding sugar, and you would fold that and separately whip them, and it gives you different textures. So once you start trying to do those type of things with vegan baking, there's certain limitations that are there just based on science, in my opinion, and you can't really get around.
Right, and as you're talking about that, I'm remembering the perfect chocolate cake, which really was a pretty darn good cake, but that chocolate icing, and I just, you know, I don't know how much butter was in there, but right. Oh, man, it was good. Yeah. I mean, it really was. It was a spectacular icing, and some things you just can't replace.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
This is kind of silly, but does a vegan confection eater consider calories? I know I'm chuckling because it sounds preposterous on its face, but to some degree, the keto folk don't really tend to calories first. They're focusing more on carbs, but I would imagine even to the keto folks, at some point, we're going to pay attention to calories. So is, I mean, how can you possibly answer for all of the vegans? But just in your observations, your experience, is this a consideration?
No, I would say it's not. I mean, I would say it's definitely not when you're a transitioning vegan. You know, because when you're a transitioning vegan, you know, you're again, there's these different phases you go through. You know, in the beginning, you're just trying to, for whatever reason you get into it, you're trying to stay away from animal products. And what happens is it's easy to do that by using substitutes. Now it's a lot. I mean, it was easier back then too. I mean, this is like over 10 years ago when I did like just strict veganism for a little while. But even then, it's a difficult transition because, well, not a difficult one. It's actually an easy one in the beginning because you're not thinking about nutrition. You're thinking about it's just not eating animal products. So, and it's a joke that, you know, I would say most vegans, if they're honest with themselves, have heard that a lot of times when you become a vegan, you become a starchitarian because it's easy to substitute, you can get pizza. Some people get pizza without the cheese. You know, you're eating a veggie burger. You're eating, you know, they have all kind of meat substitutes now. So it's not so much about the nutritional piece or the calories. It's about getting sustenance and with something that's familiar to me and it's not an animal product. And then there's an evolution in that piece. So then once you're, and this is if you're not even into health and fitness, if you're just, you know, your viewpoint on health and fitness is centered around just diet, then you may evolve to a space where, okay, now I want to stay away from as much carbs, not because I want to, take on a keto diet, but just, you know, I know carbs are you know, too many carbs aren't good for me. So, incorporating salads and these type of things. And again, I'm a chef, so it's difficult for, you know, I can't speak for the mindset of other people because it was good for me because as a chef, I wanted to try different things. I wanted to, you know, cook different things. And I wasn't fearful of it. I had an idea already. It's just a matter of taking out certain things. So it wasn't this difficult thing for me. But I imagine it can be challenging for others because some people don't cook. You know, they eat out more. And that's where one of the biggest challenges is. When you're trying to maintain a lifestyle and you're going out to eat and not going out to eat outside of going to a restaurant that you know is vegan.
No, it wasn't.
Well, everywhere is pretty vegan friendly these days. But
you mentioned you made a funny quip, which I liked, which was a carbitarian. But I wanted to ask, I know that the idea of nutrition has probably been beat up by lots of people plenty of times. As I've gotten on in my years, I'm paying closer and closer attention to all of the labels of all of the things that are in the ingredients. And while I am an omnivore all the way, I am learning partly through some of the interviews on my podcasts and partly just from reading more information. There's more and more ingredients that I just prefer not to eat. And that would be this pretty much entirely the whole class of so-called vegetable oils. The only one I buy is peanut oil, and I fry in that, and no one at my house has a peanut allergy, okay. So it's not an issue. But I know that if I look at the labels of vegetarian things, there's a whole lot of soy. Now, it's a big deal to get into because there's lots of, there's probably a lot of opinion. There's probably a whole lot of misinformation and a whole lot of propaganda, but it seems that the soy today with GMO and all of the other kinds of things that might or might not be happening to it, and this is not a rabbit hole I want to pursue, but I don't think the soy now is the soy that it was maybe even 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that people who are looking into this with the intent of getting an honest answer are coming away with that, you know, soy and canola may not be fabulous for us after all. So if these are some of the main sources of protein in a vegan diet, and if they're presenting some real serious health hazards, well, now we have a couple of questions. And and nutrition really is the thing I wanted to touch on. How is a vegan getting the quantity back of the things that were eliminated? So if you're choosing to eliminate, you know, say butter and cheese and whole milk, well, that's a lot of dairy fat. We know that there's a lot of beneficial things to the human body in dairy fat, and we can have opinions that we don't agree about that, but there's a point that, you know, the fat's good for the body. Where's that coming from? How is vegan replacing that stuff?
Okay. Well, let me go back to something else you said too, was about the soy. So, and I guess this kind of speaks to, you know, why people get into it. And there is another layer where people get into it because the perception is that a vegan diet is a healthy diet, right? And I think that to a degree that is true. However, I think some of the things that we've just been speaking on are contrary to that. So, you know, if you're doing a lot of starches, you've taken the meat out, but then you've replaced it with carbohydrates, sugar, these type of things. You know, is it soy, canola? Is it really healthy? So, again, that's a debate, and like you said, a rabbit hole that's not that worth going down. But to that point, when it comes to how are you replacing things that you were once getting, I think that is one perception. I feel that the people who are like strict omnivores, they bought into as well, that it's kind of like, I was doing this, now I've taken this out and I've replaced it with this. So then now the worry is, what do I lack? When we're talking about protein, there's so much, you know, argument about what is a complete protein. You know, protein is made up of, you know, protein is the 9 essential amino acids. So you can get a complete protein from a non-meat source when you mix certain foods, beans and rice, and it's other different ones. You know, with the soy, and you're right, you know, there's different, soy is a problematic thing, you know, not just because it's GMO, but even before that is, you know, soy has it naturally increases like estrogen, which can, you know, be problematic in itself. So I think it's just a matter of you doing, you know, your own research and finding out what works for you. Me personally, even when I did, you know, I was vegan for like a couple of years, but then I did raw food for almost a year. And, you know, I had that same worry in my head. Am I getting my nutrients? And I just did a blood test. You know, I went to a doctor. I got a blood test, done. And they can test your blood for, you know, all the nutrients that, you know, where your nutrient levels are in your blood. And, you know, they have ranges and they let you know where you're low in, B12. That's a very common one for vegans to be low in, B12. So with, you know, the B12, that's where it also gets into, you know, it's the opposite, as I mentioned, with omnivore, strict omnivore who feels that, you know, once you stop, you're not getting certain nutrients. You know, vegans tend to don't want to deal with certain information as it comes available as well. So, you know, it's pretty natural to be deficient in B12 when you don't consume animal meat, when you don't consume meat. So, you know, you can get the B12 from fermented foods. You know, you can get it from other sources. It's just a matter of, you know, how disciplined or stringent you want to be with that. I mean, I'm of the mindset when certain information comes, I'm open to it, and if it makes sense, and it aligns with, you know, my thought process and my spirit, I'm okay with it, because that's the other piece too, is that it can become a cultish type thing. So, you know, I think you have to just kind of be open to information and find what works for you. I don't think there's no singular way that is for everyone. But that's kind of how it gets, you know, put out there. Whether it's veganism or keto or they all go through those cycles, Atkins.
Right. So just to clarify for myself, because I think I didn't know this, you are now not vegan.
No, I'm not a vegan. Okay. I'm not a vegan. You know, I do eat fish. I try to, you know, I go kind of in cycles. You know, there's certain times of the year I probably eat more like animal protein. You know, in the summer I try to, you know, slow down from it, and eat more plant-based proteins. But I also do a lot of raw food. I mean, I try to have my diet, I would say at least like 70% raw food, and that could be in the form of salads, fruits, salads and fruits pretty much, nuts.
Well, I know that you're back and in the southern part of the United States, and I envy you, not too much for the heat, but there's a fish store that you and I both know.
Uh-huh.
And my, oh my, I miss Gulf fish.
Uh-huh.
I really do. Southern seafood. I've talked to Matt before. He's, man, it's too much to ship out here, but I sure do miss the Gulf fish.
Yeah.
I asked a few people, I have an Eating Liberty Facebook group, and I asked some of the people in that group and another group if they had any questions for a vegan baker.
Okay.
And so I got a couple of questions, and there was at least one question about cultured meat, and if from a vegan standpoint it is, pardon the phrase, kosher.
Cultured meat.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's this new thing, and I actually don't know what it is. I think a brand name is called Impossible Meat. I don't know how it's okay. Made.
Are you talking about, it's like just another level of meat substitute?
I'm not sure what I'm talking about, because I've never seen it in the store. I've never had it. I know that it's there. I see the social media ads. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I've tried it. I didn't know that it was referred to as cultured meat. Yeah,
well, that might be something different. I really don't know. So if we get this one wrong, listener, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the term, but yeah, because I think I heard a podcast once where they were talking about, and I could be wrong. I believe cultured meat is something they create in the lab that you don't have to go through the process of raising an animal. So, and even when I heard that, I thought that was, I thought it was pretty. It was a lot to digest. No pun intended. No pun intended. But because basically, now that we're having this conversation, it takes me back to a podcast that I was listening to, about it. And again, I didn't even think about it till just now about the cultured meat piece. But yes, it's something where they take, I want to say they take cells of animals. And they grow them in a lab in like a basically like a petri dish. And again, I don't, you know, I didn't show any visuals, so it was difficult for me to really understand, you know, how that goes. Like even to the point where I remember them talking where they were getting to a place where they could cultivate certain parts of an animal. So like if they're just gonna cultivate beef tenderloin and just the beef tenderloin. So now you don't have, you know, the whole cow, you know. And your question was about the cultured meat. So if that's what it is they're referring to as cultured meat, I mean I try to see the whole picture. I get it, you know, as far as when you're talking about the carbon footprint and, you know, what it takes resource wise when you're, you know, mass producing animals. You know, I get it. I just don't know if making a you know, ground beef or you know, whole chicken in a laboratory is, I mean, it may save on that at that point, I would just not want to eat the meat. I mean, you know, I would be for, you know, reducing the carbon footprint. You know, I want to be on the planet, but I don't know if I meat isn't that important to me to eat that. I mean, I don't know. Again, because I don't know, you know, if it's any healthy or less healthy. I mean, I haven't done that type of research, but it's a certain point in with science that I'd rather not do. You know, I mean, if I have no choice, then maybe. But, you know, at that point, I would just rather probably not eat meat or try to figure a way to raise my own animals or something. But, right. You know, that's just a little too far left for me. Now, there are a lot of new, there are some new meat alternatives that they're coming with, you know, Beyond Meat, Impossible Burger, these things. Now, I'm not sure if, you know, if that is in the same vein as that. I mean, they are creating them where they are tasting like a lot like the actual meat product, you know, maybe not as identical as a burger, but, you know, the texture, the mouthfeel, these type of things. So I don't know if this cultured meat process is also used with that to create, you know, that end product. But
well, I don't know. But as we're just in this couple of minutes talking about it, it really seems like an interesting conversation. And at least the first part that's interesting is if you could take a cell from a cow and the cow remains alive and produce from those cells meat, then, which is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's still beef, and then you cook it and eat it. Well, did you take a life? I mean, I think
right,
that's
right,
part
right.
of the question that a vegan has, and that's at least an appreciable position. So mm-hmm. if this happens, so then I think it gets kind of fuzzy, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. We're not going to try that case today, but being fuzzy is all right. But my other concern then, and so while I have no actual knowledge of the complex systems of taking in food and the body doing all the amazing things it does to turn that into bigger people or a cow. So a cow is eating what a cow eats, and it makes a bigger cow over the course of years. When you take the cell, now this is where it gets fuzzy to me, and this is where my suspicion gets really, really high, is fabulous. You've made this thing. What the hell's in it?
Right.
And
right.
And I don't know that I have enough faith in science for that the actual process won't have some long-term ramifications on the consumer. And I
right.
You know, that doesn't sound like it sounds paranoid, but it also sounds a little, you know, this is like the Croods. This is new. Yeah. New is bad. Well,
right.
I'm not sure that, you know, this is, so we can have our own opinions about it. And I haven't done any research about it. This is the biggest conversation I've had about it, but it's interesting. So,
yeah, it's very interesting. And I remember that podcast, if I can, I'm going to have to ask my wife about it, because when we travel, that's what we do, listen to just different podcasts. And I remember hearing that. And I'm going to ask her to find it for me so I can go back and listen to it. But I remember that was a question that was raised in the podcast was, you know, just to what you were just saying about there hasn't, you know, this hasn't been around long enough for there to be knowledge of, you know, the effects of this, you know. Now, one could say, and again, this is all subjective. It's, you know, if you eating And again, that's why I try not to lump myself into one, one school of thought on it or the other. I feel you have to find what works for you. But you know, some will say when you're going through certain health issues, the doctor tells you to cut back on meat. You know, I think it's while it may work for some, there's a lot of diseases and ailments that people go through with the overconsumption of meat. So is the issue more of the overconsumption, or is there something with the meat, the way it's produced, or is it just, you know, in general? And, you know, I don't know. But there, you know, there's research and data that, you know, they can at least draw some kind of conclusion, even if it's not, one way or the other, whereas with this cultured meat, I mean, again, it hasn't been around long enough. So, I mean, I get it. You know, like you say, you're not taking a life. I don't know. That's a real, like you say, fuzzy. that's a real fuzzy one right there.
One person asked about vegan keto. Require some specific knowledge, which I don't know. Maybe you don't do or do not have. But since baking seems mostly to be outside of keto in the first place, mm-hmm. is there through these different kinds of replacements, and primarily we'd be talking about wheat as the we're going to call it flour because I don't want to be evasive or obtuse. So we're taking out flour in a keto thing, and we're going to replace it with, let's say, almond meal. Because I know that mm-hmm. that works, because there are some really good Sicilian cakes that have almond meal and no flour. So I know that that's possible. But now we have the vegan problem of, well, we're still using eggs and or butter. So is this something you feel like you can answer, or is this getting a little too specific?
So repeat the question again.
One person wanted to know if there is a combination of vegan and keto desserts.
Vegan and keto desserts. I'm not positive on it. I mean, keto is actually something that's relatively new. Like even when I was doing vegan, I mean, I shouldn't say relatively new. It's probably something that's more mainstream now. I haven't, got into that realm. But what I do know of with keto is that it's high fat. High fat, low carb. So if, I would say yes, it just, there will be, obvious certain limitations. So if you're trying to do vegan with keto, I feel that you would do better doing raw food vegan dessert, because you're already, most raw food desserts are based in some type of fat, whether it be nut fat, avocado, I would say mostly nut fat, avocado. Well, so you have a lot of, go ahead.
Avocado was a big win. That's a two thumbs up for ketos.
Yeah, exactly. So but again, you would be, I don't want to say you'd be limited, because I mean, I'm just saying that from the space of I hadn't, dug into that. But I know, there would be options. Okay. There would be options. There's a lot that you can do with avocados and nut milks and, making nut cheese, that is raw, and it doesn't contain any flours. I mean, you could substitute almond flour for certain things if you're going to actually try to bake it. I don't know what that would yield, but I think that, you could be successful with certain baked or unbaked sweets with keto.
Okay.
Using dates as well, not even having to get into like agave, because that's another, controversial product, one that a lot of, vegetarians in general, lean on, but it's still a refined, a processed sugar. no different than, it's low glycemic, but it's still, you know, very, very, you know, it still has an effect on your blood sugar. So I would say dates. So with the raw food, you know, you would lean more on, you know, natural sugars. I would say date being probably the number one, because it's a dry fruit. And then from the date, you're getting into other things that are, you know, questionable, in my opinion, when you start talking about agave and you start talking about even, you know, coconut palm sugar, which is a good product. But again, it's still not in its most natural form. You had to take it from one stage and put it through a process to get that. Whereas with a date, it's dried. And, you know, that is the process.
Okay. Someone asked a question about TVP being acceptable in vegan bread. And my first thought was, is bread not vegan? So is there something – now, this question, I should read the rest of the question. And what would it take – so the question is TVB acceptable to make vegan bread? And what would it take to use TVP to make bread without wheat? So I don't know.
That's a good question.
I don't – is bread vegan anyway? Is yeast a problem?
No, I mean, I would say bread is vegan. I mean, unless you're making like challah bread or brioche. Right. But just in general,
well, yeast, then.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I would say, you know, it is now as it relates to could you take TVP and replace it with flour? Yeah, that's not something I've never tried. So I couldn't say yes or no on that.
Okay. What is your position? And I feel like we know the answer. What is your position on GMOs?
Oh, I would say you try to stay away from them if at all possible. You know, it's a hard world to live in when you're trying to live right, and you know, and it's expensive. You know, I would try to stay away from it. You know, like corn. I mean, I love tortillas. I mean, when I go out to, you know, a Mexican restaurant or something, I mean, I don't ask them, are they these you know, non-GMO tortilla chips, because I already, you know, kind of know. But, you know, if I'm home and I'm going to buy some tortillas, I'll buy the non-GMO, or just, you know. Yeah, I would stay away from it as much as possible.
Okay. Do you see any benefit from organic?
I believe so. I believe so. You know, the at the end of the day, it's just a matter of does one believe that the label is following through with what it's supposed to be, you know, and on a basic level, organic is just saying that this hasn't been, you know, these products haven't been sprayed with any type of pesticides, or they may even have like certain I don't think it's supposed to be any pesticides, but there may be certain.
There are some that are certified acceptable for organic.
Acceptable. Use. Correct. Right. So, but I believe so. I mean, I try to eat organic as much as possible. I would say, you know, again, I'm talking like in my home as opposed to going to a restaurant. I know unless it's a restaurant that is promoting that they're not using organic products. It's too expensive, and it's not really sustainable for some for most restaurant businesses, especially the way they are structured. And it's all profit driven, which is nothing wrong with that. I get it, but most restaurants, you know, they're not going to do it. So for my home life, I would say I probably purchase 80%. Organic foods. There's certain things I don't think matter, You know, so there are certain things I'll get that I know aren't organic, like bananas. You know, I'm not eating the peels, avocados. Again, I'm peeling the fruit. So I would say a lot of fruit that I'm going to peel, I may not be so hung up on it being organic. I would say more so with fruit. But like lettuces, pretty much everything. Yes, like most vegetables I'll get organic. Yeah. I'll say about 80% I do organic from my own home usage.
Right. Okay. Now you mentioned a couple of things, but the last question that I'm going to ask you is, since you do or did avoid, or since vegans avoid dairy and egg products, you mentioned a couple recommended substitutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we said eggs and dairy.
Yeah, so, because this is, so if we're looking to replace, so the eggs, of course, offer, obviously they have their flavor and they're a protein source, but also the yolks bring that, just that lovely emulsification and, mm-hmm. well, butter. So if we're going to, and I think this is the problem. And as I'm thinking about this, while I have no knowledge of vegan baking, I'm imagining that, although I don't know how it tastes, that avocado puree, because it's high fat, at least fulfills to some portion a butter replacement. Now, there may mm-hmm. be a whole bunch of other problems that the avocado brings that I don't know about, but this is where I don't think I could not, I don't think, just go out and take a brownie and turn it into vegan and expect the same thing. And I bring that one up in particular because I remember when you were doing your little vegan, you had the business at the, I forget mm-hmm. what it was. And my general observation about vegan baked goods, and probably everyone's, is there is the noticeable difference in texture and mouthfeel. And so making the perfect chocolate cake with buttercream icing is an unwise choice for a vegan substitution. Your brownie was, as vegans go, this is a really good brownie. Now, it's going to have some of those challenges, but we already knew that going in. So if you accept that the vegan thing is not going to replace or replicate, that may be the better word, you're not going to get mm-hmm. exact one for one. Right. To expect that, right. I think is to have wrong expectations. So, but as brownies go, man, you did a great job.
I appreciate it. I mean, I think there are some things that you can veganize that will, you wouldn't know the difference if I didn't tell you it was vegan. And then there are some things that you can veganize that you'll know it. You'll question, well, what something not right here. You know, it's not that it will be like so drastic, but it's certain, like you said, mouthfeel. I mean, I'm saying this from a general, you're a pastry chef. I mean, you've been a pastry chef. I mean, so you, I couldn't give that to you. When I say give it to you, I'm just talking about, you know, the average person. And then there are certain things that, you know, like I said, I really wouldn't attempt them. And it's not that it's impossible. It's just certain, you know, I'm not that invested still in vegan baking. Now, if I could start back, you know, I'm back here in Georgia and I may start my business back up. And, you know, if I feel the need to invest that time into really, you know, that type of research, then maybe I would. But, you know, that's not a space I'm in now. But I think that there's a lot you can do that is vegan that, you know, like you mentioned, if you can put that reservation behind you of it's going to be the exact same, then you will be satisfied, especially if you wanted an alternative. You know, if you wanted the exact same thing, you would just eat that product. But you know, you want an alternative. So I think it's generally understood that there's going to be some, you know, difference with that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, just a few more questions here, and this is the last part of my show, and these can be pretty quick answer questions, but they're kind of fun, and I think you're going to have a good time. Of the five flavors, sweet, salty, bitter, sour, and umami, which one do you enjoy the most?
Sweet. Sweet. Me, sweet.
What's your favorite food?
My favorite food? Oh, man. That's a hard one. My favorite food. Dan, I think I'm just getting old. It's a lot of things don't even impress me these days. I mean, I love smoothies.
Okay. Well, you're in the right spot because I know people who still crave tropical smoothies, though. What's your least favorite food?
My least favorite food? I'm not a big pho person.
Okay.
Pho. I'm not a big fan of pho.
What gets you excited?
What gets me excited? I like trying new things. I went to Orlando, and you know, Morimoto, the Iron Chef, he has a restaurant there. And I was very excited to go there. And I was very impressed, man. Like, you know, he had a dish with, and again, this is a vegan show, so pardon this. you know, this being the example of what excited me. But he had this dumpling. It was shrimp, you know, and it was really, really good. I mean, it was probably one of the best dishes I ever had in my life. It was a shrimp dumpling and... should I even do this while we're on here talking about vegan bacon?
It's okay.
it was in a duck broth, but it was like really duck broth with like chili oil. You know, it was a really amazing dish.
That's what was he there?
No, he wasn't. Oh, he wasn't.
Okay. What turned you off?
What turns me off? I would say, in the context of the show, just you know, narrow-mindedness when it comes to food, as far as for health. You know, I think we're human, but we all are individual. You know, we're all as different as fingerprints, and what works for you may not work for me. So when I hear people, and it's not just for vegans, it's even for people in the keto, all these different, you know, thought processes as it relates to food and nutrition. You know, it takes on a dogmatic type of energy that, you know, I would say that probably one of the biggest turnoffs for me.
Well, I agree with that. What sound do you love?
What sound?
Mm-hmm.
The ocean.
What sound do you hate?
Sound do I hate? I don't know. I would say traffic.
It's a common answer. And what is your favorite food indulgence?
My favorite food indulgence. Cheesecake.
Nice. It's like that white chocolate one you made. I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah.
That was so good.
And I actually have a really, really good raw food cheesecake, too.
Get out of town.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you willing to share the recipe?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Well, send that to me, and I will put that on as a PDF. I'll put that on the show notes page, which for today is going to be culinarylibertarian.com/45. And you can get Khalil's raw food cheesecake.
Okay.
And I'm waiting for, and actually, I don't know if you remember, we did the pumpkin one.
Oh, yeah. For,
yeah. Oh, I still have it. It still works. It's still amazing. I make it every year.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. And oh, God, I love that stuff. All right. Yeah. Well, that's all I got for today. And so thank you, Khalil, for your time.
Absolutely.
You mentioned something. I want to give you the chance. If you want to decline for the show, that's fine. You were mentioning you had a project you were working on. Is that something you want to share now, or you want to wait?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can share it. The project is called Fit Forward to 50. basically, it's a, I would say, a support page. I have a Facebook page now. Fit Forward, spelled just like it sounds, FITFORWARD, 2 as in the number 2, and 50 as in the number 50, 250 or 250, Fit Forward to 50. And basically, it's like a support group for people trying to figure out diet and health and exercise, you know, so... And you know, another part of my life, I'm into health and fitness, you know, and then being a chef, that, you know, motivated me to try different things. And it's kind of like bringing those together. So, you know, in that I get into a lot of, I share a lot of information that I'm learning about from different podcasts and, you know, personalities that, you know, I follow, so I share their information on there, but then I also share my, you know, my road to 50. That's the kind of the whole point. I'm 5 years away from 50. I mean, I feel really good, but it's certain things that I want to, you know, try to get better at, and that's what it's about. So I get into health, nutrition, exercise, all wrapped up into one.
Very good. Well, I will put the link for the Facebook page also on the show notes page. And do you have a website for that yet, or is that still working?
Oh, it's still working.
Okay.
It's still working.
Well, very good. Well, people can follow you on the Facebook page and keep up to date of what's going on. That's a cool project. I know somebody else who has a fitness after 50 thing. And since I'm on the other side of the 50,
okay.
it's a different thing.
Yeah.
My mind remembers me 25 saying, come on, you can do this. My knees say, dude, we ain't, you know, no. This ain't gonna happen.
So right.
It's a bit of a hit to the system. Like, dang, man, I could do this, as it turns out, 30 years ago. I was like, well, okay, never mind. I'm just, it's just getting to be too much.
Yeah.
Hurts a little bit, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just find what works. I mean, and that's really what it's about. You know, it's also for people who, you know, may not be staring 50, you know, staring at it as close as I am. But, you know, just to you know, you don't have to be approaching 50 to try to get, you know, get better and make better choices. So. You know, that's pretty much what it's about.
No, and that's sage advice at pretty much any age. It's just when we were young, we felt immortal and we didn't need it.
Yeah, right.
That was, and it felt like last week, but here it is, not last week. So, all right. Well, before we get too philosophical, thank you again. I appreciate your time. Have a good evening. Thank you so much.
You as well. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. You can get links to Khalil's Facebook page on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/45, as well as the brownie recipe we talked about. Just click the PDF link. Also, please share these episodes to your friends on Facebook and Twitter. Use the link with the little pretty buttons at the bottom of the podcast page. The more people who listen to the shows, helps move the show up in the podcatcher networks, and that helps more people find it. For vegan ingredients, I've added a link to the show notes page for some products available on Amazon. I'm sure that's not all the products, but it's a good place to start. If you're just learning, or don't know what an egg replacer looks like, or want to see what other sugar options you have, then click through the Amazon vegan ingredients link, and that'll get you started on your vegan baking journey. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.